Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Fast Eddie, and I'm here on Aeroshell Square with Thomas Selinsky of the FAA. We're by the beautiful FAA DC-3. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, sir.
Well, you guys have a DC-3 here, and it looks very nice. What do you guys do with this airplane?
Well, currently we take it to air shows so the public can see a little piece of the FAA.
Ah, so this is kind of like a standard bearer for the FAA.
Yes, this is our equivalent to a historic flight.
Oh, okay. Well, the DC-3, of course, very historic airplane. They have been around for, I'll bet you they're coming up on 70 years old now, some of the older ones. And what did you guys used to do with this airplane before you went on these historic flights?
My portion of the FAA, the Office of Aviation Systems Standards, does two small jobs that the public rarely knows about. We perform a mission of flight inspection, and we publish all the charts for everything that you do on instrument approach procedures. Flight inspection is the process of using an aircraft to calibrate every type of nav aid that you use as a pilot to safely fly. We're the folks that certify it as safe to use. N-34 here did that job between 1958 and 1981. The last 2 years of its career, 79 to 81, it was our schoolhouse. When you came to Oklahoma City to become a flight inspection technician, you learned to do that on N-34.
Wow. So this airplane has had a very long history with the FAA and continues to serve then.
Yes, sir.
That's great. Now, when you're out there calibrating nav aids, what are you looking for?
Signal strength, signal quality, signal clarity, any variations in the frequency that's coming out of there. ILS, naturally, we're making sure the glide slope is the right angle and that the localizer gets you to the center of the runway. Every VOR out there, we make sure that each radial tracks where it's supposed to and that there's no distortion in that signal. Any sort of interference that may have occurred from the last time we looked at the facility. We have cases where people build a steel barn somewhere near our VORs, and that could close out an entire quarter of the transmission signal from a VOR.
Well, now, you just mentioned something very interesting there, VORs. That technology goes back to, what, the 1950s?
Yes, sir.
Well, we have this newfangled gadget called GPS. And I'm sure that the VORs are, they're getting up there in age, and they've got to be very maintenance intensive. Is there a plan afoot for the FAA to phase them out?
Yes. The last briefing I had on it, it will be well past 2025, though, before that happens.
Oh, okay. So they're going to be around probably longer than I am.
Yes, sir.
Well, I hope that's no prophecy on my part. So, in other words, you guys are going out and inspecting, well, you used to inspect them with this aircraft. That means you've got to have a lot of skilled people as well as a lot of electronic equipment to verify this stuff is working properly.
Yes, sir.
How big of a crew would you be carrying on a normal mission with this airplane?
This airplane would carry a four-person crew, the pilot, co-pilot, the flight inspection technician, and then a ground assistant technician. N-34, typical mission for all of our flight inspections today, the aircraft commander, the left seat, flies the airplane. Collision avoidance, ground avoidance, keeps the airplane safe. The co-pilot will do all the communicating with ATC, also doing watching for traffic. And then the technician is talking to a technician that'll be on the ground side of the ATO, the guy in the VOR, the guy in the ILS that's tweaking the transmitters to get the signal back in line. On this airplane, for ILSs, we would also, in the old technology, drop a guy off at the end of the runway with a transit, a theodolite, point that up the glide slope for the correct angle, the correct direction, and as N-34, its sisters, 50 of them, flew through the crosshairs on the theodolite, he would send a transmitted signal to the recorders on the airplane. We would record his signal and the transmittal signal from the ILS and compare what that microvoltage output should be and is and adjust the beam accordingly.
Okay, so in other words, the idea is that you're optically sighting the airplane on what is the glide slope. Now you've got to make the radio signal match that optical glide slope.
Correct.
The idea is to get the airplane to the runway safely.
Yes, and that was the 50s and 60s. Today we do that technology with a hybrid that's doing both inertial nav GPS, and it's also looking at other calibrated VORs to tell us where we are in space relative to that glide slope.
So, wow, you've really gone up a lot in the G-Wiz tech factor.
Yes, sir.
Now, you mentioned that there was, what, 50 of these things?
There were 50 DC-3s operated by the FAA.
And you're still operating 50 of them?
No, sir. This was the last airplane. The last other DC-3 disappeared in the 70s.
Wow, so this is pretty much a historic land piece. Well, obviously, if you got rid of the DC-3 fleet, you had to go and replace it. What are you using in place of a DC-3 nowadays?
Well, let me throw the history in the middle. After the DC-3 fleet, we lost these airplanes because of one reason. They were too slow. We take a DC-3 into Los Angeles, into Chicago, into New York, where full out, we're doing 135 knots, and the 707 behind them was doing 140 on final, and you always get out of the way.
Yeah.
So we were just too slow. We replaced this fleet with a group of Sabreliner model 80s, which are unique to the FAA. They were model 75 airframes that were custom built for the FAA, and we also had a small cluster of jet commanders that had the same equipment you see on board this airplane, still steam gauge, analog, tube type equipment on the Sabreliners and the jet commanders. Those airplanes have been since replaced with, we have 18 Beech model 300s, we have 6 Learjet model 60s that all do our domestic operations, and then we have a fleet of 4 or 5, it keeps growing, I think we're up to 5 today, of Canadair Challengers that do all our international support.
Wow, that's quite an assortment of equipment. I imagine it keeps you hopping.
Yes.
Well, how many airports do you have to inspect every year?
Over the course of every 4 years, the FAA looks at 17,000 approaches and facilities on the ground.
That's a lot of work. And, of course, as soon as you get done your 4-year stint, you start right all over again.
And if an airport goes out of commission, a lightning strike, that adds another look. And if there's a mishap, we're there within an hour and a half to make sure that the airliner or the aircraft didn't follow a bad signal into the ground.
Okay. That would be very important, too, because in IFR weather with some of the minimums, you're busting out of the clouds at, Category 3A is like 100 feet.
Mm-hmm.
That signal's got to be spot on, or it could be a very ugly result.
Yes.
So you guys, in other words, when there is a mechanical or electronic failure or an incident, then you guys are automatically dispatched to go and check out the site of the incident.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's reasonable, because just because somebody says it's fixed doesn't mean that it is.
Correct.
And you are the guys that go out there and actually fly the nav aid, make sure that it's working properly.
Yes.
What kind of training do you need to get into this?
FAA pilot minimums are 1,500 hours minimum, 500 hours with turbine time, and then ATP is always desirable, but CFI multi-engine will work.
Wow. That's not much at all in today's standards, actually.
No, it's kind of the best-kept secret for the flying jobs on Earth. Of course, the flip side to it, it's a little bit of a military job in that we try to get the crews home on Friday and Monday, but they're out Monday through Friday on the road, dragging bags, living in hotels, a different city every night, a different airport every night.
Now, the trick to that is just to pack light and know where the laundromat is at all times. Well, it doesn't sound like a bad job. I'm sure after a while it can grind on you, but how long have you been with the FAA doing this?
I'm not a pilot. I'm an aircraft engineer. I started with the FAA in 1988 in our DAS office, actually, at Oklahoma City. We're completely authorized to do our modifications on these airplanes. Moved into Little Acquisition, helped buy those Learjets and helped buy those Challengers. And for the last 5 years or so, I've been taking care of our ISO 9000 certification and our maintenance organization.
Okay.
We recently achieved Aerospace Standard 9110, which is ISO 9000 tailored to aircraft repair facilities. We are the fourth organization in all of North America to achieve that certification.
And that had to be a lot of work putting that all together. So essentially, you're not on board this airplane, but you're helping to get the airplanes to the people that need to be on board it then.
Correct. We have a contract, literally, between our maintenance and our operation. Of our 30 airplanes, we will put 20 airplanes up, ready for service every Monday morning across the nation.